Well, definitely, our people have a right to have very high expectations. They have suffered long enough, and it is high time that this suffering ends. And they see this suffering ending by the implementation of this agreement. I would have to agree with you that we started very slowly in terms of implementation, and especially in the constitutions of the different mechanisms for implementation, because some of these mechanisms were supposed to be established 1 week after the signing, 2 weeks after the signing, but some of them were reconstituted. For example, my committee was reconstituted on the 27th of November, which was almost a little bit over 2 months late, and so on. But that said, it is expected because, you know, we are not all that disappointed or feeling that we will not catch up, because the slow start has a lot of reasons behind it. First of all, you will recall that this meeting, this agreement, when it was signed in September 12, 2018, many people took it with a pinch of salt. Especially the international community are very skeptical, or they were very skeptical about this agreement. So it didn't get the usual support, like the support that the agreement of 2015 August got. So that also implicated, you know, the late start and what have you. Having said that, we think that now there are very serious steps that have been taken. And these serious steps have implications on the speedy recovery of the lost time. The measures of confidence building that took place are actually priceless for this agreement. They are the foundation for ensuring that this agreement is implemented. You could see this confidence building measures starting with, you know, the many peace celebrations started 31st of August. You've seen opposition taking steps, coming to Juba, you know, regardless of the fact that the arrangements that were supposed to be in place in terms of security were not in place, and we just surrendered our security to the other party, which is the government. And we continue to have, now as we sit here, we have surrendered our security. It's a step that many people did not expect would happen. But we saw, in the interest of making sure that people move forward, there was need to take that risk, and also to test, to see, you know, and see the political will of the government. And you could see that we are here, we are progressing well. We as just from looking up of it, the security in Juba, people tell me that it has improved, which is also a result of the confidence building that had happened. So I don't want us to underrate the process of confidence building that is going on. Celebrations all over the states. The day before yesterday, it was in Maban. People from the territory of the IO, people from the government, the same thing in Unity State, the same thing is happening. It's viral. Let's give it a space, and let's recognize that actually this is the biggest and the most important aspects in this implementation of the agreement. Because without political will, without building this trust, all those technical steps will not take place. Yeah. Let me come back to the delays. There are a number of challenges. Number one is the challenge of resources. As up to now, as we speak, the transitional security arrangements, we were supposed to have completed the cantonment by day 45, 1 month and a half from D-Day. 45 days, we should have closed the cantonment, we should have started the screening. But cantonment is one of the most expensive aspects of the transitional security arrangement, maybe followed by training. Cantonment means you must pre-position food. You must make sure that the cantonment sites are accessible by road, land, or river. There is water and access to medical attention and all of this. Now, these logistical aspects of it requires a lot of resources. And you also know the terrain, our country, and so on. So we ended up in delays because you cannot assemble forces in big numbers in a place where you are not able to give them food. So that has been one major challenge. That is why the cantonment has dragged on a little bit. However, it is being overcome because now the JDB, which is the Joint Defence Board, they have decided that you know, instead of waiting to complete the phase one, they will start with a pilot project. They decided that they are going to train a joint force of maybe 3,000 from both parties. That will now become the nucleus of the national force, and that they will deploy that force as soon as that force is trained. Some people think that this has bypassed the cantonment stage, but not necessarily, because cantonment is about activities. It's about activities of registration, screening, and so on and so forth. And you choose the eligible persons as per the criteria set by the Joint Transitional Security Committee, which is also responsible for training at the same time. So we are devising ways to overcome some of the challenges and so on. We are, some of us, we are very excited about this pilot project or pilot program. Mm-hmm. So just imagine if you deploy 3,000 of joint or unified forces trained together with one doctorate. This to us is a positive move. And this definitely will now begin to identify, because when you start doing something, you learn from it. We identify the areas that the gaps, the challenges, and the positive aspects. Then it will make the next stage a lot easier, and so on and so forth. So that's one way of overcoming some of those challenges. We in the Strategic Defense Security Sector Review, of course, we have also started a bit late. I can say we just had our second meeting. In an span of 3 days, and we have actually started to address the issues of, as per the agreement, the challenges for our national security, both non-military and military challenges, and so on. We have looked at the historical aspects, and so on and so forth. So these are the elements that will finally inform, plus the data that we will get from cantonments and from the different institutions of government, like the Ministry of Defense, the Ministry of Finance, and so on and so forth. All those information, once we collect them, then we would have a final assessment, what we would call the security assessment. Okay. And this security assessment should actually inform the policy framework that we are going to develop for the security sector.
Talking about resources, just a few days ago, during your meeting at Crown Hotel here in Juba, it is announced that you need around $60 million to facilitate these activities you have been narrating to us. First of all, where will the money come from? And have you approached the donors? What are they saying?
The money will come from different sources. You see, funding security sector is one of the most challenging things, because most of the big donors that usually donate to our country are also constrained by what they can fund and what they cannot fund as per their own national or domestic laws, and so on. For example, the U.S. is literally inhibited to support the army in any way, especially an army that has been fighting itself and in its country and so on and so forth. So that's a challenge. So that now narrows the scope of the internationals who would come and support. So with regards to the security sector, I am afraid that the government of the Republic of South Sudan would have to really come up with most of the resources for the transitional security arrangement. Definitely we will approach other donors. The kind of donations we want, when we say cantonments, you put a budget, you don't necessarily have to get it in cash. We're looking for tents. If anybody's ready to donate tents, we're looking for medicines for the people in cantonment. If anybody's ready to donate, we're looking for food. Food is sorghum, is maize, is oil, those things. Even individual private companies, they can donate and so on. And that would reduce the burden. So I'm just talking off heads of the few things that actually people can just donate in kinds and so on. We're looking for trucks for transportation. If you're a businessman, you have 10 trucks, you can give us 5. We use them for the next 2 months. We complete the cantonment process. You would have contributed to the stabilization of our country. And so on and so forth. So these are the little things that would actually add up to that budget that you talk about. You know, when you name it and say 60 million, it sounds so, you know, huge that you think, where are we going to get this from? But when you break it down, you can see even from within our own country, we can mobilize a lot of this. We can mobilize a lot of this in kind.
As the chair of the SDRS, we are only left with 4 months to the formation of the Artigono. Do you think almost all the activities can be done within these remaining few months before the real Artigono is formed?
Now, let me divide two things. For the Strategic Defense Security Sector Review Board, our work actually runs into the transitional period. Yeah. Because the work we are doing, unlike the other works of the other transitional security mechanism, ours is not a temporary work. Ours is a formation of a policy for our security sector for the long run. Ours is the outcome of what we are going to do will actually inform our permanent constitution, and so on and so forth. So yes, definitely some of the the assessment and analysis and recommendations and so on that we'll come up with can be used by the other transitional security mechanism. So ours, we are not supposed to complete prior to the formation of the government. But in the wider aspects, the wider context, definitely the challenges are there. What are the prerequisites as per the agreement before the formation of the government? There are two things. Is the issue of the number of states and their borders, and the issue of the deployment and the formation of the formation of the unified forces. The issue of the formation of the unified forces is a process that is already starting. So we'll assess the situation comes May and say, okay, have you deployed? Because a number of things needs to happen. We are talking of demilitarization of major population centers. And in those areas, you're only deploying police and other security agencies that are responsible for the maintenance of law and order. Then comes the National Army. Also, the agreement talks roughly of this and the deployment of those. So if we will assess if you have deployed enough, and you made sure that population centers and the capital have now been demilitarized and only those designated forces are deployed, unified national forces and agencies from the army, the police, and the national security. Of course, the others like wildlife, and maybe the prison, the correctional services, and so on. Others, of course, the wildlife, you don't necessarily have to deploy them in the cities and what have you. So we'll assess that situation. Now, as per the border issue and the number of the states, already, even though they started almost 4 months late, or they have started even after they are supposed to have been disbanded, but the TBC has already started its work. I'm told that this is a very competent, well, highly skilled group of international experts who have dealt with issues of borders worldwide. They have endless experience put together. And those who saw them at work are confident that they will come up with something prior to that. But what you have to remember is that also the number of states and their borders was a political decision. You can still, you know, if you have the political will and the interest to move on and form the transitional government of national unity, you can still have a political decision also to address the issue of the border. So we don't rule that one out.
So if your assessment is going to be done in May and you still have these other obstacles, you have mentioned the issues of the state and the unification of the army, do you have any other projection or maybe any other alternative solution you may put forward, or we wait until you cross the bridge in May?
We're doubling our efforts because we don't intend to actually have to use alternative path. We want to implement the agreement as it is in spirit and letter. So we're doubling our efforts, and that's what we're going to do. So we're not going to start talking of alternatives. There are no alternatives to this agreement. This agreement has to be implemented as it is.
You have been in Juba having a series of meetings here and there. What is your general overview about the implementation of the peace process so far? 4 months down the line, you are now entering the 5th month.
I see a lot of enthusiasm and I see a lot of commitment from those who have been tasked with different elements of the implementation and so on. I see endless meeting people sitting into the night, just, you know, grappling with some of the issues and so on and so forth. This is good, and this is good to see, and I want our people to understand that those who have been tasked with the implementation and the mechanism are actually bending backwards to see to it that they meet the deadline, that they do the right thing. The other thing that I have observed in these committees, or at least in the majority of these committees, there is an element of harmony and working together for one national interest, peace and stability in our country. And this is a very serious step. You know, when we transcend the idea of partisan and we look at the issues and the problems as they are, even if sometimes you differ in the kinds of solutions you offer, but at least if you agree in the definition of the problem, then that's a positive step.
Many people are still doubting this agreement, that this is the same agreement signed by the same people who fought in 2016. Why should people of South Sudan trust the same politicians who have come back and trying to implement the agreement? In your own view, what is the difference between this agreement and the agreement of 2015? Will it work this time and bring everlasting peace to the people of South Sudan?
Definitely you will have to have the same people signing the agreement, because it's the same people who are fighting themselves. You cannot bring other people who are not at war to come and sign an agreement. So you have no choice but to actually say, you know, you're leading these warring factions and parties, and therefore it's you to come and say, let's call the truth and let us move forward. This is what had happened. The people of South Sudan, no doubt, they have a right to lose confidence in their leaders and so on and so forth, because they have been taken through hell and not yet back. So we need to bring them back from hell. And so on. So I would ask the question, with all these challenges and what have you, who else do you think can come and do this other than the same people who, you know the issues, the problems that took people to war and so on and so forth. Sometimes people give them very simple terms, or tribal, or this or that. But we do have fundamental issues of nation building. Issues of, we have not even decided the nature of our state, even after independence. we just move on. So those some other a lot of other issues. I don't want to go into root causes and this. So they need to be flagged. They need to be addressed. I don't believe, even though you still have the same people, you also have a lot of new people who are part of the process. So personally, I don't personalize the thing and look at the person, but I look at issues. That's one. The agreement is very different from the 2015. A lot of issues have been addressed that were not addressed in the 2015 access. For example, we have struggled and grappled with the issue of the system of governance and federalism. In this agreement, it is very explicit and very clear, the process of devolution of power and resources to the different levels of the government and so on. That is now, in many ways, have addressed a big stumbling blocks. And in this juncture, I say, because people who are still have not joined this agreement, people like Thomas Chirilo, who says that, you know, the issue of the system of governance has not been addressed well. I can say, yes, the issue of governance and the system of governance has been addressed. During this pre-transitional period, we were supposed to sit down and discuss, the competencies and the devolution of power and resources to the different level of the government. So we invite him and appeal to him, please, the war, our people have really suffered enough. If there's an opportunity for us to continue discussing these things as political issues, this agreement creates the space and the environment, and there's no need for continuing war. This is my appeal. I believe if anybody is to continue to die, it will be very unfair when there's an agreement that is signed. So there are a number of things that are actually different. In this.
What would be your message, especially to the women who have fallen victims of this war? They have been raped, their kids have died, their husbands have died, they are refugees living in POCs and all this. What would be your final remark for these women and the people of South Sudan who are looking forward to have an everlasting peace and go about rebuilding their life?
I would say the first place to start is to embrace this peace agreement, despite your personal suffering as a person. It is a sacrifice that you have to make for you to be able to also overcome. That's number one. Number two, in this agreement, those categories have not been forgotten. You know, in this agreement, there are a number of institutions that have been created. There is, if you've lost properties, you've lost loved one and so on, there is a commission for compensation. And restoration. That's one, to help those victims rebuild and start again. You will not start to rebuild unless there is peace and so on. There is a special fund for women in this agreement. But more importantly, for those who have suffered personal injuries, rapes and what have you, there is also an opportunity to get a redress, because we have a whole chapter on transitional justice. This chapter on transitional justice, you have an opportunity if you want to take the culprits to court, for example. If that's the only way for you, you can take them to court. You have the option of overcoming and forgiving, because we also have the element of truth and reconciliation in this agreement. So there is an array of options plus aspects to allow you to rebuild your livelihood and so on. So the women of South Sudan, you have not been forgotten. People talk about 35% representation and so on and so forth. Yes, that is there. It is very important, the visibility of women in these government institutions and elsewhere and all of that. This is very, very important, and you have that representation. I encourage the women to take up their rightful place and actually be part of the organized forces. You need 35% there. Be part of all the other government institutions, and this appeal also goes to the parties to make sure that we observe that that aspect. But for me, most important is these elements that have been built in. In fact, there is also a fund, that educational fund, that is allocated also for youth. These youth include young girls, and so on. So you learn about your agreement, you would see what would work for you, and so on in this agreement, and where you can go and claim your rights, and so on. We'll continue to talk about them. Thank you.